Guys, and welcome to the pilot episode of the new series for Crónicas Paranormales. And this series or season, whatever you want to call it, we will be talking about serial killers around the world. Like I said, this is the pilot for it. So we have the co-host and a special guest today, Patricia.
Hi everyone. Yeah, so as Victor, you know, mentioned, it's a new series, and I'm just so fortunate that he invited me to co-host this series with him, because I don't know, I just find the whole topic of serial killers just very interesting. Just a fascination with them. I don't know. Just find it fascinating how a person can be capable of just committing these horrible acts and murders, and I'm glad to be on here.
Well, thank you for accepting the invitation. Did you know some of the early signs of a serial killer?
No, not really.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good because that's what we're going to be talking about today. Today we are going to be talking about the early signs or what to look for, how a serial killer is actually classified, and there is nine of these signs. And we'll talk about them, dissect them, and, you know, give you guys our own opinion of what we think about them right now at the moment. So, yeah, without any further ado, we are going to kick it off with early signs of a serial killer.
Yeah, and then talking about serial killers also, Victor, I got to ask, so do you know, where the term serial killer comes from? Do you know... how would you explain a serial killer? Do you know what a serial killer, like, what the definition is, or tell us a bit about that?
To be honest with you, I have never looked into, like, depth of what a serial killer is, just because it's been a very regular term nowadays, saying, oh, well, so-and-so was a serial killer. The only thing that I know is, like, a person who does, like, multiple killings, but other than that, that's about it. Like, I have no further information into it,
Yeah, that's pretty normal. I mean, obviously, nobody's really gonna know who a serial killer is or who, the definition of it off the top of their head, so I understand that, but I'm just gonna, a little bit of a fact here. So, a serial killer is typically a person who murders three or more people. So you had it right in that aspect.
Okay.
And they're usually in the service of abnormal psychological gratification. And oftentimes the murders take place over more than a month, and including a significant period of time between them. So that's what the definition of a serial killer is. And if you've heard the phrase serial killer, then obviously, like Victor said, it's around the media. But you never really know, you never really hear who coined the term. And so that's where we introduced Mr. Robert Ressler. And, he was a former FBI investigator, and he wrote the book on criminology. And during a career spent researching serial killers and other violent offenders, he came with the term serial killer. And so that's how we got the term from FBI investigator Robert Ressler. And so he coined it in the early, I want to say early 70s, during his time as an investigator. So,
Very, very interesting. That I didn't know. Like I said, a lot of people overlook it. I'm one of those people. I overlooked it just because I've grown accustomed to listening to the term here and there. So I was just like, oh, okay. I didn't even know it had a significant history behind it,
Yeah. Yeah, and then, that's what we're here for. That's what we're going to do today. We're just going to just talk a bit about serial killers. And like you mentioned, the signs, the early warning signs. Because I feel like it's important. It's important to recognize the signs for serial killers, especially.
Yeah, like you were saying, yeah, we do have an article where they talk about nine signs of a serial killer. The information, we are currently getting it from crimemuseum.org, so all credit to them. Do you want to start us off with it, or should I start us off with it?
I can start us off with it. For
okay,
sure.
Go for it.
So remember, these are just like just warning signs, and don't go around accusing your neighbors or anything like that. Antisocial behavior, that's going to be number one. So psychopaths have a strong tendency towards antisocial behavior, so watch for extremely antisocial children. That being said, some children develop more slowly, and this is not a definitive sign, so it's not a for sure sign. Pay attention if a child regresses from being extremely social to extremely antisocial. One example of this antisocial behavior, we could look at Ed Gein, and he was the inspiration for Psycho's Norman Bates and Silence of the Lambs' Buffalo Bill. They had no social connections besides his extremely religious and abusive mother, who punished him when he tried to make friends. After she died in 1945, Gein began to murder and dig up graves, collecting body parts of women who looked like his mother and trying to make a woman soup. So, of course, just by reading this, I mean, this is just one of the behaviors you just gotta look out for, especially early on in early adolescence, because this could be problematic behavior. Vic, what do you think?
It's very interesting. Yeah, like you said, like it says in the article, antisocial behavior. I mean, yeah, there is times where if the kid is, like, say, because I've seen where there is kids who are very antisocial, but that's because they have, like, autism and stuff. So don't get it confused, people, you know. If the kid doesn't have a pre-existing medical condition, then obviously it might be a little bit of a concern. Especially if, like it says here, you know, the kid was very social at one point, and next thing you know, he just kind of separates himself from the world, you know, then he might be in the wrong path, you know. He might be going towards the wrong path.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, just going down the wrong path for sure. It's just I couldn't have said it better. Yeah, I totally agree. You want to go ahead and let's move on to the second.
Number two, the warning signs is arson. For those of you who don't know what arson is. Are people who set things on fire. So people who like the fire and went away, like to harm. Many serial killers start out as arsonists. Arson is psychologically attractive because it involves manipulating power and control, something that a serial killer also offers. So by you being an arsonist, you feel like you got the power. You feel like you got the power to manipulate, control, and destroy anything you want, you know? Mm.
So, I guess by that, what that means is that, so they get off, right? They get off on the way that they control the fire, the way that they destroy things, right? Like, it's another method of killing, but it's not a human being. It's more of like destroying a building or setting things on fire, as opposed to not the next step, which is, I mean, obviously when I put it that way, I don't put it lightly, you know. Like, obviously arson, and then they move on to the next best thing, you know. It's like a pattern, you know. So arsonists, you know, the actions, and you know, even arsonists, like, the arson could potentially cause the death of others, because, you know, they could set a building on fire and people are killed as a result of it. But the primary intent, you know, was, you know, to just set things on fire. So
yeah, like you said, I do agree with you. Like, most of the time, the arsonist does feel like it gives them the sense that they are God, pretty much, that they are in control of, you know, what's going on with the environment. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily gets them off. I don't know what term you meant it, you know, but
it gets them, like you said, it's the it gives them that sense of satisfaction just being in control is what I meant by that.
Oh, so yeah, so it gives them power. But yeah, that would be the second sign to look for. So if you guys see anybody who likes to set things on fire, even if it's like little things and stuff, you might want to be careful, you know. You might want to help out this individual, and you know, so that way you could prevent the catastrophe. Go ahead and take it away with the next one.
Yeah, sure. And just like he was saying, don't just be very careful. Just you know, observe the individual, just like Victor was saying. I agree. So number three is torturing small animals, and as that's quite. That term in itself is quite horrific. I mean, that's something that nobody ever wants to listen to or hear, you know, torturing small animals. That the crime in itself is quite gruesome. And so this is the third one, and this is one of the strongest warning signs. Children who torture or kill small animals like squirrels, birds, cats, and dogs without showing remorse are highly likely to be sociopaths. Many serial killers kill to control others' lives. And as children, small animals are the only lives they have the power to control. And I cannot agree more with this, because, you know, it's the first opportunity that a person who suffers from, you know, like antisocial behavior or something like that, it's the first time that they actually have power over another living thing, which is a creature. In this case, it could be any kind of animal. So
like you were saying, like you're about to say, yeah, there is a great sample of this, the cannibalistic serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer. Dahmer, I think that's how you're saying.
Dahmer.
So I said it right the first time, I guess. This guy, he would go around the woods as a child, collecting dead animals to dissect, and as the time went by, he even went as far as dismembering or cutting into pieces his little dog, and he mounted his head on a stake when he was done. So right there, that's red flags, like all the way out there, you know, it's not because the man was interested in biology, you know, he's like, oh, let me do a dissection real quick. Now he got something else going on with this little brain, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I agree with you on that. He has to have been going through quite the mindset, especially. And you know, this thinking about torturing small animals. You know, the place where we're from. You know, San Joaquin Valley.
Yes.
I can't help but recollect on. Can't help but mention. I think this happened. How long ago this happened, but this is what this reminds me of, the torturing small animals. This teenager, he would. I think it was out. In a little small part of a campo, and he would torture cats. And so when the news got out, that was quite crazy of that happening. And so yeah, so that's just off topic, but I mean, it is not off topic, it's around torturing small animals, but yeah, maybe we can go into that in a later podcast.
Yep. I did heard about that. I also heard about it too. But when I heard about it, I didn't really pay attention to it, because I was just like, whatever, you know, it's all fake news in a way. But right. Now that I read it, it was serious. Like, it was a serious thing. The next one, number four, and I think this one is one of the big, like one of the big recipes for disaster on these people's life. Poor family life. So many serial killers come from a very unstable background with families that have criminal and psychiatric or alcoholic stories and abuses. These killers often have a terrible relationship with their families and often use them as their first victims.
Wow. So just by reading that, it's clear to see that this can really affect a lot of people, and it can just steer them towards the path of like destruction. And it's funny that you well, it's not funny because it's a very serious topic,
ironic,
but, it's yeah really. Now that you say that, we have an example here about Ed Kemper. So he was the co-ed killer, and he killed his grandparents at the age of 15. After being released at age 21, Kemper killed six female college students. The police finally caught him when Kemper killed his violent alcoholic mother. So he treated his mother's corpse particularly brutally. So he decapitating her, using her head as a dartboard, and throwing her vocal cords down the garbage disposal. So he must have really had a poor family life to feel the need to decapitate his mother. and, you know, use her head as a dartboard. I mean, there's a lot of psychological, you know, like a, there's a big psychological impact on that that would make him use his mother's head as a dartboard, you know, because it kind of is like, what in what way did his mother treat Ed Kemper for him to want to use his his mother's head as a dartboard, you know? So
yeah, I don't know, like, you have to be really you have to be like really disturbed in order to have that much hatred towards your mom, especially, you know, because it seems like the man did have a lot of like corruption growing up in his life and his family. But they, I don't know, they are, like I said, this is one of the big recipes for disaster. And then the next one is also another one. So keep in mind that these two terms, number 4, poor family life, and number 5, are gonna be a big part played later on the series. So just remember, we will refer back to them. But yeah, go ahead and give us number 5, Patricia.
Yeah, so number 5, as Victor stated, it's child abuse. And this is another topic that's, unfortunately, you know, many serial killers, they go back to, well, they don't go back, but this is a behavior that they learned when they were children. So let me go ahead and read this. So many serial killers are abused physically, psychologically, sexually, as children, by a close family member. This behavior instills in the child feelings of humiliation and helpless, feelings which they will later seek to instill in their victims. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at a little bit earlier. But yeah, so, you know, it's unfortunate that they had to undergo this kind of treatment, and they might even feel powerless and shame, so that in result, you know, it could cause them to want to inflict that pain on others, because they're like, well, I went through this, it's normal, this is the behavior, the only behavior that I've ever known. And, you know, because in a lot of classes, you know, psychology classes, they say that the first main social the social organization that a child is introduced to is their family. So if they're abused, that's gonna be horrible. The outcome, you can only imagine, is gonna be very horrible.
Yeah, one example of childhood abuse that we have right here would be Eileen Wuornos, also known as a prostitute serial killer. She was abandoned by her mother. She was abandoned by her mother, and she was also never loved by her father. And when her grandparents, when her grandfather started caring for her, he really didn't take care of her. He mostly physically and sexually abused her until she ran away from home. But what this character would do, like I said, she was a prostitute. She would lure men into the highway, and, you know, they would pick her up, request her services or whatever, and she would kill them and steal all of their belongings and then dump the body somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, and it's she's one of those cases where it's like, I don't know, it's like, I guess you could say she almost was, you know, as a result of childhood abuse, she killed these men. Maybe, you know,
I want to say in retaliation.
Aspect of, yeah, in retaliation for how she was treated as a child, and now how she's being treated as a woman, you know, being a prostitute and being, you know, being objectified by men, and just the whole, we could dive into this topic, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, but yeah.
But yeah, the next one, number 6, and I also think number 6 kind of plays a little factor into it, would be substance abuse. As previously stated, many serial killers have struggled with drugs and alcohol abuse in their family, and therefore, they, like Patricia said it, they grew up in an environment where all they ever knew was, you know, I gotta abuse this kind of drug, I gotta abuse alcohol. Therefore, they are stuck in a cycle, and as they get older, you know, the cycle increases, and it just gets worse, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it gets worse unless, you know, someone intervenes, like someone that really cares about them, you know, intervenes in their life during this point. And just, but unfortunately, many of these individuals don't have those caring, loving figures in their life. And so unfortunately, they continue to abuse the substances, just, you know, just like alcohol, opioids, anything really that gets them high. And, you know, as a result of all this drug and alcohol abuse, it makes them, especially alcohol, you know, you just get so enraged if you're already thinking these thoughts, these violent thoughts, you know. And so for sure, substance abuse can indeed, you know, it just can make it a lot worse. It could just further, I can't think of the word, but, you know, it just further, there we go, it further escalates things, for sure, the substance abuse.
Okay. And then number seven.
So number seven is voyeurism. And so from a young age, many serial killers are interested in voyeurism, sadomasochistic pornography, and fetishism. And I think if I'm corrected, voyeurism is the act of just secretly looking at someone, right? Almost like a peeping Tom, if I'm not.
I believe that's what it is also. And let's double check, but I believe that's what it is. Unless I'm... Okay, as I said, unless I'm confusing it with the other one where you expose yourself, but...
No, that's something else. But yeah, voyeurism is, you know, you get sexual pleasure from watching others when they're either naked or they're engaging in sexual activity, almost like a peeping Tom.
Really. Well, that's what a peeping Tom is. Yeah.
Yeah, so the term, they go hand in hand, so yeah.
Yeah, so one sample of this would be Ted Bundy claimed that as an adolescent, he would get drunk and stalk around his community at night looking for undressing women or other titillating sights. So that's pretty much how it all begins, you know. They get interested in watching other people, you know, do stuff like that, you know, like private stuff. And then it escalates to the point where they could either branch out to be rapists, or just serial killers, but most of the time, people who were into voyeurism turned out to be rapists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's a disorder, you know, referring to, you know, sexual interests, preferences, fantasies, things like that. So these are just symptoms of that disorder, but for sure it's, you know, like Victor said, it just could lead to being rapists because, you know, they could just be uninterested in just peeping now, and they want to further.
Yeah, they want to further broad their selection or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. then we go into the next one.
Yeah, number eight, intelligence. Many serial killers have high IQs in the bright normal range and or are organized serial killers who kill methodically, like John Wayne Gracie or Ted Bundy. They had an IQ average of 113, while disorganized killers have an average IQ of 93. So most people that I don't know, this is just my personal thing. Most people who are really smart and really successful and stuff, sooner or later they get bored of your everyday average, like, situations, I guess you want to say it, that they seek methods that will allow them to experience more challenges, you know, because, like, from what it says here, these guys, they had a really high IQ, you know, 113, that's a really high IQ, and he was a very well organized killer. You know, a killer that he would cover his tracks and stuff. And then there is the other guy with the 93 IQ. And they probably were still very careful around stuff, but they were kind of careless at a point sometimes, maybe. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
And then there's other examples of them too. We have Ed Kemper, who had an IQ of 136, and 140 is recorded as a genius. You know, and this man used this intelligence to convince psychiatrists to release him after only serving 5 years for his grandparents' murders. claiming that he had changed, that he was in fact a new man, but he didn't, you know, and he kept on killing. And he, as a matter of fact, he even killed like eight more women to be exact, and then he got caught again.
Wow. So it almost seems like having talked about some of the few warning signs and things like that, you know, especially early childhood and things like that. So like these smarter serial killers that you just talked about, you know, probably could have done more with their life, right? If they took the time to just use their intelligence for the greater good, as opposed to the brutal murder and serial that they committed, you know. So it's like it kind of ties in, you know, with like how they were raised and how they were treated. Because if they were really smart, of course they're gonna have a low self-esteem, so they're not really gonna channel their intelligence for anything good, right? If they have such a bad childhood, right? So it's like they never had that positive reinforcement, so they're just gonna continue just to use their intelligence for, you know, unfortunately, serial killing. And so that's what that seems to me. So
that's totally pretty much the whole cherry on the cake. Like you said, if you know, if you're a really smart person, you probably will have low self-esteem just because other people are gonna look down on you, saying, "Oh, look at you, you nerd, you know it all." You know, they're gonna bully you, so therefore you're not gonna develop the social skills to be able to, you know, have a normal life.
Right.
And it brings us down to the last one.
Yeah. So the last one is it's a shiftlessness. So despite having higher than normal intelligence, many serial killers have trouble keeping jobs, or they work in unskilled labor. So from this, I'm thinking, since their side gig, you know, and that's not, again, not putting it lightly, but their side endeavors, which include, you know, murdering people on the low, of course they're gonna keep working unskilled labor jobs. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of crazy. So they could slide into the radar, I'm assuming, you know, something like that.
Yeah, they do that, like you said, just so that way they could be mobile. They could go from point A to point B and stuff, and people are gonna be like, "Oh, well, you know, he was just your average Joe, and you know, it's just, you know, your normal thing." There is actually a serial killer, which I wanna get into the podcast later on, and he was very shiftless. He's a perfect example. So yeah, just keep in mind with these terms, guys. They are gonna be coming back later on as the series progresses. And yeah, that's pretty much the end of it. But like Patricia said, once again, just because you guys see people who have these kind of effects or whatever or signs, don't go around classifying them as serial killers, because that would probably get you a big right hook to the face, you know.
There you go. Yeah, you know, just take these terms, you know, we're just talking about these, and you know, just because they're here and you know we mentioned them and we went in depth with them, you know, we talked about them. Yeah, just like Victor said, don't go out and try to classify your neighbors or anything like that, you know, because that's gonna be not so good.
Yeah, we are Chronicas Paranormales are not responsible. If you get a right hook to the face, that's on you.
Exactly. I like that. We're not responsible. We're not liable.
Yeah. But what do you think about the science, Patricia? Give us your overall, like, what were your thoughts when you...
I mean, already, like I said, I'm already interested in serial killers and things like that. Ever since I was in high school,
uh-huh.
I took a psychology class, and so our professor, not professor, but our teacher, made us choose a serial killer and research them in depth and, you know, collect information on them and things like that. And then at the end of the school year, we had to make a presentation. So you can only imagine having a whole year's worth of time to study a person and study their, you know, their motives. So for me, reading all these, it was kind of like I kind of already knew what they meant, because I had that prior experience of researching a serial killer. And so for me, this is just this is not something new to me because, you know, I'm kind of familiar with these terms a bit, so that's why reading them, it's not such a shock. I mean, it is a shock because, you know, like when I saw torturing small animals, of course, that's something that I would not like to hear or listen about, you know, and especially torturing small animals. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like you said, yeah, it's crazy. But unfortunately, you know, that's happened around the world. My final thoughts about this, just before we close this up, yeah, we wrap it up. I honestly, I knew some of these signs were like, I, because like you said, I have also had the project where you gotta study a serial killer for psychology and stuff and sociology classes. But the ones that I already knew were like the big recipes for disasters were, let's see,
like early childhood, right? Those are like,
yeah, the very early childhood, either childhood abuse, poor family life, let's see, what was the other one? Antisocial behavior, and then substance abuse, because, you know, substance abuse does lead you, they do lead to, like, these kind of problems, you know, but they are pretty good signs, you know, now that I know them, that, you know, we can categorize the next episodes.
Yeah, for sure. And then it's, you know, coming back to some of these, like, especially number three, I keep coming back to number three, which is the torturing small animals. Like, if, especially the case of what happened here in the, you know, locally with the teenager and the cats, like, I wonder if, did anybody really see the signs, you know? Did anybody really see the signs of him, you know? And could they have stopped it? Because, you know, that's just something that ran through my head as I was reading number three. So, it's just something to think about.
Well, yeah. Well, we're about to wrap it up, guys. Thank you for listening to this pilot episode of Crónicas Paranormales. And if you guys liked it, go ahead and share it with your friends. Let them know that we at Crónicas are doing a little series of event for the serial killers around the world. And if you guys have any that you guys would like to research and stuff, don't forget, you guys could always send them to us on the Instagram at Crónicas Paranormales, exact same name, type it in there, you will find it. We have the same logo. And or you guys could send us an email. We have the email on the description, you know. Let us know, be like, yo, this is a killer that I found interested. I would want you guys to do more research on it. And we will, you know, we will. And, you know, we'll take it from there. But thank you very much, Patricia. Thank you for joining us again. And, yeah, is there anything else you want to tell the audience?
No, not really. Just thank you for listening and joining us on our journey into our series. And, just once again, I would like to thank my co-host, Victor, for inviting me and allowing me to be part of his series. So I'm excited to see what comes next. And I'm excited to get to research and talk about these kinds of things. And yeah.
Well, thank you, guys, and we'll see you on the next episode. Later.
Bye.